Today is Saturday. It's the 15th of February, 2020. Today, Sayadaw will give a talk to the international Metta meditators, and he will talk about the near and far enemy of Metta. Okay, now. So out there in the world, it's not only people or living beings who have enemies, but also and Metta has enemies. So what we call an enemy, this is something, a person who does not contribute to happiness, well-being, and peace, but rather causes suffering, distress in all forms. That's why out there in the world, people are very much afraid of enemies. So one enemy is dosa, and there is a near enemy, and there is a far enemy. So the far enemy of Metta is dosa. And the near enemy of Metta is raga, meaning lust, desire. So, out there in the world, who are people more afraid of? Are they more afraid of the near enemy, or are they more afraid of the far enemy? They are more afraid of the near enemy. Because the near enemy causes suffering in both body and mind, physical suffering, also mental suffering, and the near enemy can also cause the suffering of killing or dying. Because the far enemy out there in the world, an enemy who is far away, so this enemy cannot very easily cause one suffering or kill one. When an enemy is near, then that person is able to kill another person or to kill oneself. When the enemy is far away, then that person cannot immediately kill oneself. So the near enemy of metta, this is raga, lust, desire. And why is raga, lust, desire, called the near enemy of metta? Because it can pretend to be beneficial or bring beneficial results. It can pretend to be metta. That's why in Burma or in Burmese language, speaking of raga, Pali word, in Burmese then it's translated as to like or to love. So metta and raga, for those who are not learned or do not know it, they do not know how to differentiate metta and raga, or they do not differentiate it at all. And also, when there is no mindfulness, then one does not differentiate between metta and raga. And even learned people or people who have studied a bit, even people who are mindful, they still might take raga for metta, meaning they still cannot differentiate between the two. So, for example, let's say there are two lovers, a young man, a young woman. They love each other. And so the young man would say to the young girl, "I have metta for you." Sayadaw doesn't know how young people would express this in other countries. If it also would be like, "I have metta for you." In Western countries, how would you express it? Or else?
Italy lo ti amo.
In Italian, ti amo. So in these cases, when young people love each other, so it's not metta, but it's actually based on raga. So, as Sayadaw just said, even learned people may not know the difference between metta and raga. So, learned people still, you know, use these words interchangeable: metta, raga. So when raga, lust, desire, arises in the mind, then at that time, at that moment, metta is gone. Then there is no metta in the mind. And also, raga has the power or the potential to destroy the metta. That's why raga is called the near enemy of metta. So, raga, lust, desire, is called the near enemy of metta because, on the one hand, it can pretend to be metta, and on the other hand, raga can destroy the metta. However, or on the other side, dosa, anger, aversion, ill will, this is the far enemy of metta. Because when dosa arises in the mind, then one knows there is dosa. And dosa cannot pretend to be metta. And dosa cannot so easily destroy metta. And this is why it is called the far enemy of metta. So, those who engage in the practice of metta meditation, they have to be careful that raga does not enter the mind. And also those who engage in the practice of metta meditation, they have to be careful that the far enemy of metta, namely dosa, does not appear or arise in the mind. So when one engages in the practice of metta meditation, then when raga, lust or desire, appears in the mind, then the metta disappears. Metta is no longer present. And this happens again and again. Now Sayadaw will explain further how this happens when cultivating metta, then how raga arises. He will explain how the metta that is present gradually fades and disappears or is destroyed when raga arises. So let's say a metta meditator is cultivating loving kindness and the practice is going well. Metta is present in the heart, in the mind, and therefore the mind becomes calm, peaceful, and also the body feels calm, at ease. So the mind becomes calm and focused. So then, that meditator may enjoy the happiness and peace that has arisen in the mind. The meditator then enjoys and clings to the calmness, to the concentration in the mind. Then the meditator holds on to that well-being in the mind. And so at that time, when there is holding on to, when there is clinging to these nice experiences, this is no longer metta, but this is tanha raga. Tanha meaning clinging, holding on. Raga, desire, lust. Or sometimes when meditators cultivate metta, they feel incredibly pleased, full of joy. It also can happen that it produces a smile on their face. And sometimes meditators even laugh out loudly. So then it can happen that when a meditator's mind feels incredibly joyful and happy, elated, that they hold on to this experience. Or when they feel their face smiling, that they enjoy, hold on to this experience. Or when they laugh out loudly, that they enjoy this kind of experience. And then they may try to repeat these experiences again and again. Mm-hmm. These kind of experiences, they can arise as a result of the metta meditation practice, and they are good results. So, as just said, these experiences are experiences that can arise based on one's metta meditation practice. These are in itself good experiences, nice experiences. As Saito has said, it can be the calmness of the mind, the peacefulness, or the happiness, or the elation, the joy, or the one-pointedness. But when these kinds of experiences happen, one has to be careful that one does not get attached to these experiences, that one doesn't cling to these experiences, that one does not hold on to these experiences, but one needs to continue to cultivate the metta. And one has also to be careful that one is not attached to the object of one's metta meditation, that one is not holding on to that object, to that person, but that one focuses on the cultivation of this wish for the well-being of the other person. A metta meditator needs to be like a lotus flower in a pond. A lotus flower grows in a pond, however, the flower itself is not in the water. Likewise, in the metta meditation, we cultivate the metta for another person, the object of our metta meditation, but we have to be careful that we are not attached to that person, that we do not hold on to this person, but that we only cultivate this well-wishing for the other person. So if instead of just cultivating this well-wishing for the other person, if one is attached to that person, if one holds on to that person, if one clings to that person, then when that person experiences some difficulties, some suffering, or if that person dies, then instead of metta in oneself, there is suffering to the point that one cries.
Uh-huh.
So if the other if the other person who is the object of our metta meditation is not like the lotus flower, which is not immersed in the water. So if there is the clinging or the attachment to the other person, then oneself, one will suffer from sorrow, from grief, mental distress, mental suffering. Or else, when one sees that person being the object of one's metta meditation, or when one hears the voice of that person, or when one sees something that person eats, so instead of just the pure metta, there is attachment, there is craving, or there is lust. So this is how tanha, raga, craving, clinging, lust, desire can arise while doing the metta meditation practice. That's why, as metta meditation meditators, you should be careful that the near enemy of metta, namely tanha raga, does not appear, does not arise in your mind. And likewise, metta meditators must be careful that the far enemy of metta, namely dosa, does not arise in their minds. Now Sayadaw will talk about how dosa may arise in the mind when one engages in the practice of metta. So let's say a person is cultivating metta for a certain person, and through cultivating metta, then the mind of that person becomes calm, focused, peaceful, and happy. But then a memory may come up, or one may hear a sound, or one may see a person, and because of that, the nice experiences of being focused, calm, peaceful, and so on, they disappear, and so one is no longer satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
or else the meditator, while practicing metta meditation, then may remember something in connection to the person who is the object of one's metta meditation. So maybe a fault or a flaw in that person may appear in one's mind, and on account of that, the metta is no longer there, the metta disappears, and instead dosa, anger, aversion, or ill will arises. So today in the interview, one meditator reported that this meditator was cultivating metta for a son, and looking at the good side of the son, the meditator was able to cultivate metta for the son. But then a bad side of that son popped up in the mind of the meditator, and with that, the meditator was no longer able to cultivate metta for the son. And then the meditator said, the meditator did no longer cultivate metta for the son, but changed to another person, to a friend. And with that, the meditator was able to cultivate metta. So it can happen that while engaging in the practice of metta meditation, one sees another person, or one hears another person, one encounters another person, and because of some reason or another, one is no longer satisfied or finds a fault. And so with that, the metta then disappears. And instead of the metta, there arises dissatisfaction or ill will or anger. So in this way, dosa, as the far enemy of metta, arises. That's why we need always to be very careful that during the practice of metta meditation, the far enemy of metta, namely dosa, does not arise in the mind. So meditators must be very careful that a dosa does not arise. Be careful that whenever they see something, a person, or when they hear a person, or the sound, the voice of a person, or while eating, when they notice something. So to be always careful that dosa does not arise in the mind. And once the dosa, anger, aversion, ill will has arisen in the mind, then the metta is no longer present. And in such a moment, it's very difficult to arouse the metta again. So we have to be very careful to cultivate the metta in a way that dosa has no way to enter the mind, that dosa does not arise in the mind. Some people think that dosa is actually a virtue. So these people, they are not careful to not let dosa arise, but they let dosa arise, they act it out, they manifest their dosa in different ways, and they are even proud of being a dosa person, a dosa type. So dosa, is that a friend or is it an enemy?
Yendu.
Yes, enemy. It's good to recognize it as enemy. Now Sayadaw will explain some of the shortcomings or faults of dosa. So, in the scriptures, we can find many places which speak about the shortcomings of dosa, like the Buddha had talked about it many times. So, among the many things that the Buddha said, Sayadaw will just mention a few of these shortcomings. So, dosa is able to destroy all the good benefits or results in my life. And dosa can also destroy the well-being and happiness of others. So, for example, when I'm cultivating metta and metta is present, then I myself feel happy and peaceful, and also others will feel happy and peaceful. However, if dosa arises in the mind and even acting out that dosa in different ways, then I feel miserable, I am suffering, and also others will suffer. Others will be harmed or cause suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So dosa is able to destroy my own happiness and peace, and it is also able to destroy the happiness and peace of others. This is true. Another shortcoming is when there is a lot of dosa, one looks no longer beautiful or handsome. So people with a lot of dosa, they look no longer beautiful or handsome in this life. They look ugly. And also as a karmic result in future existences, such people will look ugly. So what do you want? Do you want to look beautiful and handsome, or do you want to look ugly? If you want to look beautiful and handsome, don't let dosa arise. Another shortcoming of dosa is it will shorten one's life. Do you want to die in a young age, or do you want to live long? Do you want to live long, or do you want to have a short life? So if you want to live long, then do not let dosa arise. Do not have dosa. So if there is little dosa, no dosa, if there is a lot of metta, then one is healthy and has a long life. So if you look around in the world, there are many people who suffer from high blood pressure or who suffer from various heart diseases. And very often one finds that people suffering from high blood pressure or various heart diseases have dosa or have a lot of dosa. Another shortcoming of dosa is that on account of a lot of dosa, these people will experience the separation from their spouses or separation from their sons and daughters, or that they lose their property, that their property is taken. Those who have a lot of dosa, they are often hated by others, and they often have many enemies. People with a lot of dosa, they experience a lot of mental distress, also near the time of their death, experiencing mental distress, and on account of that, they are reborn in lower realms, in the hell realm. So those beings who are reborn in the hell realm, this is on account of their strong dosa. One of the hell realms is called Avicii Hell, and it is called Avicii because it's so crowded with beings there that there is no space in between the hell beings. So this Avicii hell realm is incredibly crowded. You know, in India or in China, it's pretty crowded too. Many, many people living there. But this is nothing in compared to the living space in Avicii hell. Really no space to, almost no space to sit down or to lie or to move about, just very close to each other. So, which is the most populated country in the world? It's the Avicii country. And who gets to this Avicii country? It's those beings with a lot of dosa. So there are incredibly many beings with a lot of dosa who end up there. So on account of dosa, a lot of dosa, one may lose one's fortune, one's money, or one may be separated from one's spouse or one's children, and so on. Sayadaw will give now an example. He will talk about a Burmese man living here in Myanmar. So this man, he wanted to go to Malaysia in order to work, to make money. So he applied for a job in Malaysia, which he got. He applied for a visa to go to Malaysia, which he also got. And the cost for applying for this job and getting the working visa was about 25 lakhs or 30 lakhs, like 2.5 million chats or 3 million chats. And he also then got an airplane ticket. And then on the day he was departing, in order to go to the airport, he took a taxi. So on the way to the airport, then on the street in front of his car, there was a trishul. So the trishul in front of them was quite slow, and you know this man should get to the airport in time. So the man told the taxi driver to use the horn. The taxi driver used the horn to signal the trishul driver to make room so that it can pass, but the trishul driver did not move to the side. And as the trishul driver did not move to the side, the man lowered the window and shouted out of the window, "Hey, didn't you hear the horn? Hey, give way, move to the side." So the man got angry, upset. Dosa was arising in his mind. And somehow then the taxi driver tried to overtake the trishul driver, but the man was so furious, so angry at the trishul driver that out of the window he gave him a blow with his fist. And well, actually, then they stopped, and so the man and the trishul driver, they were fighting with each other. And the man, being so angry, he grabbed a stone from the side of the road and threw it at the head of the trishul driver. And so the trishul driver then was bleeding and probably falling down on the street, and blood was running out or was covering the street. So many people then surrounded this scene, and then also some policemen arrived. So the policemen arrested both of them, put the chains around them, and took them into custody. So this man, instead of reaching Malaysia, where did he end up? So he got into the prison. And because of the fight, he also got blows, so injuries and swellings. He was swollen in the face. So this man, instead of reaching Malaysia, he reached the prison. And instead of earning money in Malaysia, he had to spend a lot of money. And also his relationship or his family broke up, separation from his wife and children, and being alone in the prison. And in the prison, he did not get good food, and it was not a good, nice place to stay. So there was a lot of suffering for this man, both physical suffering and mental suffering. So all this bad effects, all this suffering that the man encountered, why did he encounter that? It's because of dosa, of his anger, aversion. So ask yourself, is dosa something you should cultivate in your mind, or something not to cultivate, not to have? Something not to hold or cultivate. And how can we remove dosa? We can remove it by cultivating metta. So metta is the opposite of dosa. So whoever engages in the practice of metta meditation should reflect on the shortcomings of dosa and should reflect on the benefits of metta. So dosa is not something that is beneficial, that is contributing to one's happiness and well-being. On the contrary, dosa destroys whatever happiness or peace or well-being there is. So we should try to cultivate metta, loving kindness, as much as we can, so to set up the causes for our well-being and happiness. So when one engages in the cultivation of metta, so one is a metta meditator, or one could call that a metta person, a holder of metta. So for such a metta holder or metta person, it is shameful to hold on to dosa or let dosa reign in one's mind. That's why as soon as we notice when dosa arises, we should remove it, replace it with metta. So may you be able to always hold metta in your heart, to cultivate loving kindness, and therefore by that may you be able to become virtuous people, feel happy and peaceful.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.